Welcome back to another Baseball America Prospect Podcast. We are diving into the Detroit Tigers top 30 today. This is your host, Jeff Ponce, alongside me. All right, let's dive right into this system, JJ, one of the deeper systems that we're going to cover in this series. Very exciting up top. Let's talk maybe a little bit more big picture about this Tigers rebuild, because since the last time the Tigers were, I don't want to say in the World Series, but at least in the ALCS, since they were last a competitive team, we've seen some rebuilds, right? Like, there's been some rebuilds over the last couple of years. We've started to see it come to fruition at the major league level over the last 2 or 3 years. But there's sort of another gear here that might get hit in 2026 potentially. So where is the team at right now, and what's sort of the state of the farm system?
So if you took the last 2 years and you sliced it in the most favorable way for the Tigers, they're one of the best teams in the American League, right? If you take the team that finished 2024 and started 2025, that's a dominating team. They were seemingly out of it, and then they made that furious run at the end of 24, made it to the playoffs. Then they come back in 25, and they come out, and they're rolling, and then it all falls apart. So then if you took the first half of 24 and the second half of 25, you could say, this isn't a playoff team, even though they've gone to the playoffs for the last 2 years, and they've actually, you know, made a little bit of noise in the playoffs as well. This offseason, obviously, very different, which is they went out and signed Framber Valdez, and then we have the Tarek Skubal. I know he just got a ton of money in arbitration, but Tarek Skubal paying that much money for 1 year to the best pitcher in the American League is a privilege, not a burden. Let's just lay that out. The opportunity to have the back-to-back Cy Young winner taking the mound for you, hopefully 32 to 34 times next year or this upcoming season, is not a bad thing. Now having another guy right behind him who has been a very solid front of the rotation starter, the rest of that pitching staff as well, this is all good. Now the question I think really does become, and I think we'll dive into this a little bit, this is a good team lineup-wise, but I don't know if everything fits together as it's currently constructed. And that's where this is going to get really challenging. And I say that in part because, like, if you look at a guy like Valdez, Valdez is a ground ball pitcher. So infield defense is valuable. And if you said, what does this infield defense look like on a normal day? I don't know if there's going to be a whole lot of days where you say that there's an above average to plus defender anywhere around the infield. And if you said, okay, well, what if we retool things here? The things that we're talking about probably also don't get them to having an above average to plus defender anywhere. If you said the guys that they have currently, like obviously they have Javier Baez back, they have Zach McKinstry, they have Colt Keith, they have Gleyber Torres back for another year because he accepted the qualifying offer. They have Spencer Torkelson. Those guys, again, there's some good bats there. There's some guys, again, if you took Javier Baez, you could say that you had a half season of really good, and you had a half season where Javier Baez has been kind of the guy that we've seen a lot. But if you said, okay, what do you hope out of that? I don't think that you're hoping that any of those players are plus defenders. And I mean, McKinstry, like, who's going to be the shortstop? Is it going to be McKinstry? Is it going to be Baez? Is it going to be Kevin McGonigal? Is it going to be a little bit of Trey Sweeney? Is Trey Cruz part of that mix? There's a lot of names there. But again, there's a lot of guys. Colt Keith hasn't played a whole lot of third base for the Tigers because he hasn't been very good over there. Is he part of that mix at third base? Or is it McKinstry? Or is it Vierling? Or is it we could go kind of with all of these positions other than second base, which seems like that's where Gleyber Torres is going to play, and you got Torkelson at first. There's a lot of mix and match, but again, we don't have a whole lot of guys. There are gloves coming. There are some really good gloves lower down in the minors, shortstops who can really play shortstop, but that's not what you have kind of knocking on the door or in the big leagues right now, and that's where it's going to be interesting to see how all this fits together.
Yeah, and I think that is the most exciting part of this. In addition to the number one prospect in this system, outside of Connor Griffin, one of the better prospects that I've covered in the 5 years here at Baseball America. So I'm going to say, it probably wasn't a very difficult decision to rank Kevin McGonigal at one. I don't even know if you have to answer that question. I am interested to hear how you, maybe outside folks, maybe some of your inside mm-hmm. sources, view McGonagall's 2026 playing out. What percentage of his games and at-bats are going to come at the big league level?
That's, I think, a very much to be determined. You could make a very strong case that he could be there all year, right? Like, that would be fast. He just got to Double-A. I would say if Gleyber Torres, now, okay, I can argue both sides of this too. If Gleyber Torres had not re-signed, I could see the Tigers basically spending the entire offseason saying, get ready at second base, come to spring training, and the your goal is to try to win the second base job. I think that is the best fit defensively for McGonagall. Even though he hasn't played a ton of games there, I think that that would be something where you're like, okay, defensively, we're asking a little bit less of you, which makes it a little easier to kind of make that ascent and kind of step into the big league lineup. You, with them, with hit that being kind of second base being blocked, then the question becomes, okay, where is he going to play? I don't think there's any scenario where you bring Kevin McGonagall up to play part-time. If you have him at the big league level, you want him playing very regularly. And if that's the case, okay, is it shortstop or third base? And I don't know. That's where this gets a little tougher, because that's where he's a little bit more stretched defensively. He has very little experience at third base. You know, that's not really a position that he is can anyway say he's mastered. He has a lot of experience at shortstop, but that's a position where he's a little stretched there. His arm isn't great for the position. I wouldn't say that he has exceptional range. I think everything that when you talk to scouts who really like him, even defensively, it's that they think he could be a plus defender at second base. I really have never talked to anyone who thinks he could be a plus or an above average defender at shortstop. Maybe someone out there does exist. I haven't found that person yet in talking to him. So if that's the case, goes back to what we were just talking about. Like, okay, is it ready? Are you ready to push him up to the big leagues, either at a position where he doesn't have a whole lot of experience, third base, again, second base, unless they're moving Gleyber Torres at this point in his career to third base. Second base doesn't seem to be kind of blocked. Or are you willing to put him at shortstop, say, we're going to live with kind of fringy defense there defensively, but we also think this guy will be one of the best hitters in our lineup by midseason, and it's worth it for that. So that's where the discussion becomes really interesting. And the other part of that is that we both, again, love Kevin McGonagall as a prospect. I do think if you said what could go wrong in 26 for him, a lot of it comes down to if he's asked to kind of be stretched defensively, could that carry over to the plate? I really don't have a whole lot of worries about Kevin McGonagall as a hitter, but we do know that if you ask, I mean, this would be one of the youngest players in the major leagues, and you're asking them to be stretched defensively, sometimes that can have negative effects on your, you know, on you at the plate. That would be my only big overriding risk about him as far as a hitter. I think he's one of the best pure hitters we've seen come through the minors in a very long time. But these are the questions that kind of aren't, they don't have obvious answers is the way I put it.
Yeah. And I think that's what's kind of interesting about all this. You know, what we talked about in the open of, you know, the team kind of heading into this all in 26 direction. You have this guy who doesn't have any AAA time. We'll certainly put that out there though. I think over the last decade, we've seen that substantial amounts of AAA time don't necessarily make you any more ready. If anything, it kind of gives you a signal or a sign that a team isn't so confident that a player is, you know, available and able to help the team immediately. They might skip the level all entirely. They might put him up there for a couple of weeks and then call him up. I don't think that that's out of the realm of possibility. There's also a chance he spends half a season there too. We've seen that from teams.
I think if he goes to AAA, and he, by the way, it's not even crazy that you could send him back to Double-A to start the season. It's not like he was there for a long time. But whatever it is, I think a lot of that would be if you send him down, it is like maybe it is to play third base like every day to try to get to a level of comfort at third base to where you say, okay, the goal is whether it's May, whether it's June, we're going to bring you up to be potentially our everyday third baseman. That maybe that's an option. Or maybe it's, you know what, we thought that you're almost ready, but we want you to keep working on your defense at shortstop so that when we call you up, like those are, I think it's going to be much more based about where do you see him fitting in your lineup in 26 if he goes back to the minors than it is, oh, he needs another 300, 400 plate appearances so we'll feel comfortable about his bat and where, how ready his bat is. you saw it last year in person. Like, as a hitter, there's not a whole lot I don't think that AAA is going to teach him. Any lessons he still has to learn, a lot of them probably are things that you will kind of get that test in the majors and then have to make those adjustments in the major leagues.
Yeah, and I think that's what the tricky part of all this is. Let's move on to the next question here, JJ. How is this system better or worse than it was last year? Kind of a tricky one, I think, because the guys that made it good this year were good last year.
So I would say, like, in some, like, let's start by saying this is the best the Tigers farm system has been in the Baseball America era. Baseball America founded in 1981. And for the vast majority of the years, it's not that the Tigers haven't produced players over the years at times, especially some pitchers. But when it comes to position players, this is not a system that has produced a ton of great hitters, a ton of great position players. And yes, if you're raising your hand and saying, wait, what about Alan Trammell and Lou Whitaker? That precedes the Baseball America era. We are talking much more of the Nick Castellanos, and there aren't a ton of hitters better than that who've come up. I would say in recent years we've seen more, because we've seen Riley Green and Dylan Dingler, and we've seen, you know, guys like this that have produced. So hitter wise it is in really great shape. Like, there are a ton of intriguing hitters, there are a ton of up the middle players here, like you say, like I mean, we talked about McGonagall, but you talk about Max Clark, who was at the same level as you know, as those guys, you know, as McGonagall, as Jose Briseño, who was also very good. So, like, you have that coming up. You have that second tier of guys like a Trey Cruz, who had a better year last year and got added to the 40-man. A Hau-Yu Lee, who's kind of knocking on the door. You have Franyerber Montilla. You've got guys further down. You've got – there's a number of intriguing guys here, position player-wise, at kind of all levels. There are some catchers. There are some shortstop slash middle infielders. There are a few outfielders. There are some outfielders as well. All that's there. Pitching wise, so if you said, well, is this system better? From that standpoint, yes. Even with the backing up of Thyron Lorenzo and a couple other guys, this is a better system than it was last year. Kevin McGonagall has taken another step forward. I would say that you could say that, you know, multiple players, position players, took a step forward. The pitching side is much, much, much thinner. There is not a pitcher in this top 10 right now. When I was looking at it and trying to make a case for a pitcher for the top 10, the cases were like a guy like a Kelvis Salcedo, who I really like, but he had like a cup of coffee in low A at the end of the year. So it's, and he could be end up being a reliever. So that's a guy who's good, but like, you don't want to go overboard. They did draft Malachi Witherspoon, you know, one of the Witherspoon, you know, brothers, but one who had a 6 ERA pretty much for his college career, has control issues. They have guys like Owen Hall, you know, Andrew Sears. There are some arms you kind of can like, but a lot of pitchers who the last couple of years they've drafted who've been injured, who have struggled to be healthy. A couple of guys who took steps forward, and now Jaden Hamm took a step forward. Now he's taking a step back. His stuff kind of really backed up last year. There's a lot of pitching where you're like, okay, maybe this breaks through, but it's not there right now. Now, again, this is a team that, you know, that did just produce Jackson Jobe. I know he's coming off, you know, coming back later this year, but it's not like that this is a team who hasn't produced any arms. Obviously, you know, you could throw in the you know, the Reese Olsons of the world. You know, they have Casey Mize in rotation. They produce it. It's not like I haven't produced before, but I'm saying right now in the minor leagues, there's not a whole lot of, oh, this arm is ready. Or if you said who are going to be the guys who step in if Tarek Skubal leaves as expected at the end of the year. Not a whole lot of starters who are knocking on the door that you expect to be kind of that mid-season or late-season arrival who then steps into a solid spot in rotation. That's a little bit more of a question, I would say, here. So the good and where it's better, I would say, is on the position player side, and where it's worse is on the pitcher side, largely because there's a number of these pretty prominent pitchers that they've taken in recent years, you know, the Paul Wilsons, the guys like that, the Schlieffenbeins, who just haven't been healthy. And there's a lot of these guys who haven't been healthy, and we want to see them get on the mound and then do it for the course of a full or close to a full season to kind of see what they can do.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think your point about the pitching is well stated. And of course, Jackson Jobe was still prospect eligible heading into last year too. So But I think that the other parts of the system, particularly the position depth, has taken such a step forward in the last year that even with the loss of Jobe, who was our number three prospect entering the year last year, I mean, one of the more highly ranked pitchers that we've had. And, you know, fortunately for a from a ranking standpoint, graduated, so we don't have to think about him for another year and a half. But interesting to see where this system has gone. And, you know, this front office has really moved the Tigers in a modern direction. So maybe that can be hope for some of these other teams that took on different front offices, that things can change very quickly. Just be patient. So let's move on to the next question here. And I think this is an interesting one because there are some obvious answers, but maybe some debate depending upon who graduates. Who is your number one prospect guess for 2027?
So again, this does get tricky because we just talked about it. We haven't talked about Max Clark a lot. This may be an opportunity to talk about Max Clark a little bit, which is another top 10 prospect in the game. I do think that he could very well graduate this year. Like, I don't look at the Tigers outfield and say, well, this is, you know, this is, you know, a lineup of three all-star outfielders and no one's going to push that aside. You have Parker Meadows coming off of an injured plague year, although he's a really good defender in center. Baez plays out there some. You know, you have Riley Green, who I think is kind of the one that you write in ink and say he's playing pretty much every day if he's healthy. Kerry Carpenter DHing, going back and forth in the outfield. And then a whole lot of, well, what is, does Vierling get some, you know, some plate appearances out there? Does Wenzel Perez get some plate appearances out there? The other guys, like, there's a lot of like candidates, but I could construct a case very easily that by midseason, Max Clark is the best option they have because the guy can really hit. But also on top of that, he could be a really, like, you have the chance to have, if you put him in the outfield, say with a Parker Meadows, you are really also doing something from a run prevention standpoint because those guys can both really run. Clark should be a very good defender as well, who, you know, again, if you put him in that scenario, you probably put Meadows in center on those days and you put Clark in right and Green in left. And that could be a pretty good outfield defensively as well. So he could graduate. Pretty polished hitter again. Like, there's a lot really to like there. If he doesn't graduate, and we're assuming in this case that McGonigal does, then Clark is your logical number one next year. But Bryce Rainer, who, again, when we say the system better or worse, Bryce Rainer was kind of got off to a solid start and then had a significant shoulder injury that kind of cost him three-fifths of the season last year. He should be healthy this year, but if Bryce Rainer comes back healthy, that was the guy who was debated with Connor Griffin on who was the best high school shortstop in that class. There's big power there. There's, you know, legitimate infield tools. The funny thing is like, I don't know if he was the best shortstop on his own team, but that doesn't even mean that he couldn't be a really good shortstop because I do love, it was fun watching that Lakeland team, you know, whenever they were on MILB TV, because there's some really good defenders there on that team for Yerber Montilla before he got hurt. But like, he could be a very logical number one. And by the way, I mean, he could be, like we're saying, like they could graduate a pair of top 10 prospects in the game. I don't think it's crazy at all to think that Bryce Rainer could be a top 10 prospect at this time next year. If he has a healthy season, you know, makes it to double A, all that, like that could be the next. The guy who I will say is up there right now, who I don't see being their number one, is Josue Briceño. And that's not a knock against Josue Briceño, but other guy we're talking about here just has more defensive value, less defensive questions. Briceño he has got real power, but it's a little bit more of kind of a limited profile, I would say. And so the other guys that we're talking about here are much more kind of dynamic profiles. So that would be my again, if I had to guess right now, I would say that the likely chances is it's Rainer. That doesn't mention a guy like Jordan Yost, who was a first rounder of them last year too. But I think that Rainer just has louder tools and more likely to be kind of that number one.
Yeah, I agree with you. I argued that Bryce Rainer could be the number one prospect in baseball with a great season. I think the skill set is very comparable to, like, from a hitter standpoint, to young Roman Anthony, only he has a chance to stay in the left side of the infield, which Roman Anthony was the prospect he was, ranked the way he was, got the money that he did as a corner outfielder. He's a shortstop or a third baseman, and I do think he has the arm. I mean, it's a rocket to stick over there. Yeah, I think Rayner could potentially blow up this year with a full healthy year and, you know, hitting in the Midwest League and then potentially getting up to Double A. You know, they never get the benefit of hitting the Texas League, some of these teams hitting in the Cal League, that sort of thing. But the Florida State League, and particularly Lakeland, is not an easy place to hit. So credit to him for the power that he showed there, because it's typically a league that suppresses power quite a bit. So let's talk about it. It feels like we've kind of already answered this question. What is this organization good at developing, JJ?
It's never been the case before, but you have seen a transformation as far as what I would say that you've seen two things, right? You've seen a transformation in what the Tigers go after in the draft, more so than internationally, but I would say draft internationally, but especially in the draft in the last 5 years. It used to be that this was an organization that drafted tools, and you know, there was kind of a running line of SEC pitchers with relief risk. I mean, that was kind of a running thing, but I would say the tools, like if you sound position player side, it was tools first and then try to develop the bats. And to be honest, that didn't work for them all that well. Like there was a lot of guys that they drafted pretty high who it's like, okay, this guy's a really good defender. I don't know if he's going to hit well enough to make it. And we've seen, I mean, I'm not going to just try to rattle off, but there's examples of that. Then they flipped. And I would say that they then emphasized hitters. And okay, even if they have defensive questions, let's get guys who can hit and then develop them defensively. And I would say that that's worked, although there's still risk with that as well, right? Like if you said the Colt Keefs and the Jace Youngs and all, like this team, this organization still has a number of guys. Max Anderson had a very good 2025, like really did kind of take a step forward and got better defensively at second base, I would say. But at the same time, you still have a question with him. Where does he fit defensively in the long term? And it may be that that kind of prevents him from ever being a regular. Maybe he doesn't fit somewhere defensively. How Yu Lee, who's a good, solid player, but I don't know where he fits. Like Colt Keefe, we're still trying to say, well, like, where is Colt Keefe going to fit? He's obviously signed an extension long term and all that, but where is he going to fit defensively for this team? So they had that wave, right? Which is, this wave of guys, you could throw the Pachecos and all this as well, where they had that wave. And then they seem to have unlocked another thing, which is now then they've got, you know, then you could throw the McGonagalls, you could throw the Max Clarks, you could throw the Bryce Rainers. We'll see if it's Jordan Yost and all, where I would say that they then kind of went that next step of guys who had both hitting ability and defensive value. McGonagall is a steal for them, right? Like if you... Obviously, he was a colder weather, less of a baseball hotbed area. So there was concerns that way from an evaluative standpoint. How much is this guy, what he's doing based about who he's playing versus how good he is? So there was that. Then there was that he's also not very big, right? Like if you said, I said earlier, like the biggest concern I could come up with Kevin McGonagall is could his defense affect his bat, especially in the short term? The other one in the long term is, and I'm not really saying that this is going to happen, but like we always end up talking about Connor Griffin and and McGonagall. And we talk about and we compare them and all that. The difference between these two is that Kevin McGonagall has to max out strength-wise all these aspects of his game to where if he loses a notch, if he just drops down as far as athletically, as far as strength, as far as all these things, if he drops a tier on that, it's going to affect him much more than it will, say, a guy like a Connor Griffin, who kind of will reach the majors as basically one of the best athletes in the game. That's where there's a little difference here. But even with that, like, again, McGonagall is a steal of a draft pick. Max Clark, they were picking high, but Max Clark looks like what they expected when they drafted him. You could say, is he going to hit for big power? We don't know. Sometimes his swing doesn't really kind of play that way, but he should be a very well-rounded player who's a very productive big leaguer, especially when you throw in the speed, the potential defense, all that. They've done that. Those things are really good. And I would say, though, that also on the pitching side, they have been really good at developing pitchers who, it's very much, it seems like an emphasis of the Tigers to make sure that you have a way to get right-handers out and you way to get left-handers out. And if that means that you're almost like two different pitchers, that's fine. I kind of, there's a little bit of an Astros feel to that. Obviously, AJ Hinch came out of the Astros organization. But I would say on top of that, the big league club has shown that they know how to take a guy like a Keeter Montero and figure out what is the way to maximize the value of these players as they come up. So those things are all good. This is why, if you said, like, why are the Tigers coming off back-to-back playoff appearances? And let's just be clear, if this team doesn't make the playoffs in 2026, it would be a massive disappointment. This is a team that I would say that you would, this is the team that ideally is constructed that by October, the Tigers should be a team that no one wants to face, right? And when I say by October, because by October, again, assuming health, you have a Skubal and you have a Valdez front of the rotation. By the way, by that point, in some form, you should have Jackson Jobe back too, who could be useful. But also, you have this whole season we just talked about. This is a relatively deep system, right? This is a system who has guys who are not going to fit for the Tigers necessarily, who you could then trade in deals to try to help out. And if you said, like, to take an extreme example of it, if you said what team could really benefit potentially from just adding one really plus defender in the infield just to kind of become part of this mix, right? Like, I'm not saying that finding a plus defender at shortstop in a trade is going to be cheap, but if you're saying that you don't really care that much about how much he hits, could be reasonably obtainable, those kind of things. That would really help. Or if it was like, hey, we've been bouncing around on this, but we've decided we're going to really fix this by going out and getting a Gold Glove third baseman for the rest of the year or something like that. There are ways that this team could really take a step forward from a run prevention standpoint. They're really deep at catcher because we just talked about, like, they produced Dylan Dingler. They still have Jake Rogers. That's a really good 1-2 at catcher. They have, even if we say they could probably use another outfielder, a regular, maybe that's Max Clark, could also say that there's no one injury where you're like, oh, okay, well, this is all derailed now. They played a ton of guys out there. So this organization is in a really good place, I would say, right now. And going to give them credit here right now, too. Like, going out and signing Valdez plus Skubal plus Gleyber Torres, you know, taking the qualifying offer, you put all these things together. And in a division where very, very, very few teams spend, the Tigers are spending, and that very well could be the difference in this division this year.
I mean, I'll take it a step further with your playoff comment. If they don't win this division by 5 games this year, I think that's a disappointment. They should have last year. They finished a game behind the Guardians. They won 87 games. For them to do that, they had to go. They weren't great in July. They were 11-14 in July. They were 7-17 in September. I think everyone forgets how many games in a row that they lost for a stretch. There was 11 or 12. They had a really, really down stretch. This was a 90 plus win team that, you know, went through the ringer at the end of the season and then kind of recaptured a little bit. So it'll be interesting.
Let me summarize it this way. They were 80-58 going into September.
Exactly.
If you just said at that point, hey, okay, I got good news for you guys. Just win 89. Win nine games this month. That would have done it, and it didn't do it. Like, yeah, that is a – and by the way, I think that's
one of the 15. Like, it would have been a bad month, and they still would have won it.
Just lay out with that. That's where I do think, like, we'll see – again, they've done an offseason that I would say has been a much more kind of aggressive offseason. The other key thing with that, though, is they had a pretty quiet – deadline last year, and I do think I'll just lay it out. Like, I just laid it out. There are players here, like, we haven't talked about John Peck. I really like John Peck. John Peck is potentially a very useful big leaguer. They have more of these guys at AA, AAA, and the majors between those three levels than you can play, right? Like, if you said, how many infielders do they have for AAA and the majors, who are basically either AAA ready or major in the major leagues or major league ready, they have more than they're going to be able to play. And so with that being the case, now some of these guys, I don't want to make it sound like Trey Cruz has massive trade value, right? I don't want to make it sound like Jace Young has massive trade. Haoyu Lee, Max Anderson, but they have some value. There are teams where Max Anderson, the bat, may be enough to be like, we'll figure it out, but he would actually help us. Like we, you know, and I would say that right now, if you set on the depth chart of second base, he's probably fourth or fifth and he's ready for AAA. But like, there's so many guys we could mention who, if you had, you know, if Gleyber Torres went down, well, then Kevin McGonigal should be your everyday second baseman. If the nightmare happened and Gleyber and McGonigal went down, you still have additional options ahead of him. They have players who you're going to run out of time to figure out where they fit. But again, if you're saying, could you trade some of these guys? Could you trade, again, like maybe even like get really aggressive and trade one of these shortstops? Well, at that point, then you really could make a significant upgrade. Again, we don't know where this team's going to be in July, but I do think there was a lesson to be learned from that. Obviously, 2 years ago, the lesson was, hey, you can have it all. You can trade away a Jack Flaherty at the deadline and then make a run. Last year was the lesson of...
And then get him back.
And then get him back. Last year was the lesson of maybe we should have been a little bit more aggressive, filled some of these holes, and they didn't. And then the team seemed to kind of run out of gas at the second half season. Let's see if they avoid that this year.
All right. And that's good points. I think that wraps up our video version of this, this podcast. If you're listening on the podcast, stick around. As you know, we got plenty more to come. We'll take a quick break and then we'll be right back. All right, JJ, we are back for the second half of this podcast. We're going to get a little deeper into this very talented Tigers system. JJ, let's go right into it. Who are some of the sleepers that are outside of the top 10? We spent a lot of time in the top 10. Maybe we didn't even talk about some of the guys in the back end, so certainly you can mix some of those in. Who are the guys that you're kind of looking at saying, hey, when we do this next year, I think these are guys that could potentially be top 10 prospects for the Tigers that aren't right now?
So we mentioned Salcedo, but I feel like the need to start there, because like we both have talked about how much we kind of enjoyed watching him. He's kind of funky. He's a little different. There's really good stuff there. Like if you are saying who are the Tigers minor league pitchers with the best pure stuff, there's a lot of pitches where you could make the argument, well, maybe for this it's Salcedo. Maybe for this it's Salcedo. Now, again, far away, you know, there you don't want to go overboard on something like that when a guy is this far away, but he's 100% kind of like a name absolutely to know, kind of helped combine on a no hitter in the FCL last year and then made it up to the Florida State League at the end of the year. He's one that really jumps out, but we did talk about him a little bit. I do want to talk a little bit about John Peck, who was a pick out of Pepperdine a few years, Peck was a Pepperdine pick a couple of years ago. And there was a lot of belief in the glove. And then I say that the bat has ended up being a little bit better so far than maybe expected. Now, I still think there are questions about how much John Peck's going to hit. I don't think there's a lot of questions about how much he's going to field. I think that when we talk about a guy who, you know, as we laid out in the early part of this show, there's a lot of guys who's like, okay, this guy faces defensive questions. You don't really see that with Peck. Like Peck could be a plus defender with plus speed, like who can play multiple positions around the infield. Like I do think him and Trey Cruz, who's another guy to talk about here. Trey Cruz has kind of been around this Tigers system for quite a while and was kind of described as a little bit of a frustrating player for a number of years, where it's like the tools were good, but it never seemed to add up to kind of what you thought it might should add up to. Last year it did. Last year he was pretty solid. He kind of is now in AAA. He can play most anywhere. I mean, when I say most anywhere, like he's played games at almost, you know, he's not a catcher, but he's played all three outfield spots. He's played shortstop. He's played second base. He's played third base. And he's really is kind of a true shortstop. So like he could be that kind of multi-position player that you call up at some point and you're like, can he play shortstop? Yeah, he can give you solid shortstop defense. Can he play second? Yeah, he can really play second. Can he play third? Sure. Need him in the outfield today, he can do that. There's some value to that kind of versatility there. I think he's kind of, again, you have him and Peck coming up who kind of give you the athleticism and the glove. And then, like we said earlier, you've got kind of the How You Lees, you've got the Max Andersons and all coming up who, but you've also got Jack Penny. I mean, like, when I say that this team has a ton of infielders, Jack Penny, pick out of Notre Dame a couple of years ago, who I would say kind of fits more in that group of the, okay, this guy's going to hit. Now we'll figure out, and he should be able to play in the dirt. We'll figure out where his best position is. But so they got a nice mix of guys, even outside of that top crew, they have a nice mix of guys who either can give you a really good glove or give you potentially a solid bat and then maybe enough glove. That's kind of that is a grouping that they haven't had, you know, 5 years ago, they did not have a ton of guys like this, who I think are kind of really interesting. The other part I will say, though, that always fascinates me with this is the Tigers, the Guardians do this very much too, same division. The amount of left-handed or switch-hitting infielders in this organization is kind of stunning. It is something where it is clearly something that they kind of emphasize. I know that they have Glaber, who is a right-handed hitter, but that was a sign, you know, that's not someone they've developed. If you look at McGonagall, if you look at Rayner, if you look at, like, again, Fran Yerber is kind of the exception to this, but like, there are a lot of guys. I think that the Tigers very much value the platoon advantage of a lefty who gets to face righties a lot more than a righty ever gets to face lefties. That is valuable to them, or switch hitters as well. Like, that's something that really does stand out here too. The thing that I would say is still kind of like, okay, the other part to watch here is there are a number of guys here you're kind of hoping for bounce back seasons from, like Thyron Lorenzo, we talked about, like, was not very good last year, like had injuries, but just really did struggle. But we've seen things in the past. Is he going to take a step forward? You and I both, we were a little slow to move him down just because we just kept getting the season before and even into spring training positive feedback about Thyron Lorenzo. The hope is maybe that was just kind of a lost 2025 season. Ty Madden is a guy who I'm not ready to give up on, even if, you know, it has not come together yet. There's guys like that. There's guys like, you know, we mentioned that there's a number of injured arms here who kind of, it hasn't all come together yet. But I would be remiss not to mention, I don't know where he's going to fit in the big leagues, but they did add Eduardo Valencia to their 40 man. He's a catcher slash first base. If I say that Josue Briseño is a catcher slash first base, Valencia is probably more of a DH slash catcher slash first base. I don't know if he really has a defensive home, but he had a really good year at the plate offensively in AAA, added to the 40 man, could be in the mix a little bit. So those are some guys who all kind of stand out. But the other thing that just kind of jumps out to me that before we kind of wrap this up, that I did want to talk about a little bit is kind of looking at this is kind of, It's interesting to see like how this is a team that obviously now kind of has a little bit of a timetable right now here, right? Because they have Skubal for one more year and the expectation, not that it's a guarantee, but the expectation is he'll be gone. But at the same time, because you have McGonagall and you have Clark and you have Briseño and you have Bryce Rayner and you have this group of really premium prospects kind of coming up who aren't far away, I feel like I wondered what you thought about it. The flip side is like, there is a scenario to me where this team is not like, okay, well, we got to do it this year. Obviously having Skubals really helps, but like, this could be a team that I still feel is really positioned with a couple of astute moves and all to be kind of a contender year after year after year. But I wonder what you thought.
Yeah, I think they still have, I think they have an interesting process in terms of identification. We've seen it across, you know, a few different acquisition windows, whether it's via trades, whether it's, you know, the draft. We've seen more interesting international signings. I think Chris Rodriguez is a sign of that. They've taken a little bit more upside. I think where I'm interested to see is the development of some of these pitchers after 10. Because there's a decent amount of them. Salcedo, we talked about. We mentioned Witherspoon. some of these younger high school guys like, you know, Owen Hall, that they got a couple years back. They got Ryan Hall this year, right, in 25. You know, how do those guys take steps forward? And, you know, how do they use some of this depth to potentially supplement the major league team? It was something that you said earlier, and we didn't go into it a ton, but I do also think outside of Clark and McGonagall, and depending on how aggressive they want to get, but we've seen a lot of good players with expiring contracts move for much, much less than Bryce Rainer as a prospect. Frankly, Briseño probably is a headliner in a lot of these sort of expiring contract deals at the deadline. They feel like a team that has the firepower to supplement this roster, whether that be the defensive upgrade you talked about, another no doubt reliever. They go out and they get, you know, obviously it would take a bigger prospect to get a Mason Miller or someone like that. But I do think that they're very much in an advantageous position to not only kind of walk off the bus day one and win that division going away. I think they also sort of had the ponies here in the stable to make some trades and bringing a couple of guys that's, you know, really, really solidify that. I think the other thing is too, you look at the American League this year, the Blue Jays have absolutely gotten better. They went to the World Series last year. You know, we can't argue a ton there. I don't know if the Yankees are any better than they were a year ago, if the Red Sox are any better. The Orioles are better, but they were also 12 games below 500 a year ago. We talked about this division. The Mariners are about even to where they were. I don't know if the Astros have taken that step forward to really be a real force. And I don't think the Rangers or the Athletics are there yet. So I think you kind of look at the picture in the American League heading into the season, and I feel like the Tigers are in a really good position to maybe have their best year in, you know, over a decade.
It's possible. Now, again, I will say you never count out in the division. You never count out Cleveland because Cleveland seems to be there every year. And Kansas City, you know, we saw 2 years ago Kansas City was a playoff team. They weren't that far away. When we talk about everything we just talked about with the defense for the Tigers and the infield and our concerns, you look at the Bobby Witt, Michael Garcia, like that is basically – that is a left side of the infield where nothing gets through. So, like, you have a star there in Witt. You have Michael Garcia, who's pretty close to a star. That's a team that could also kind of, I would say, challenge in this division. You know, the White Sox are getting better. I don't know where the Twins are right now, to be honest with you. Kind of, are they going to keep the guys they have now? Or are they going to end up selling? We'll see. But, no, I do think that this Tigers team, the best way you can put it is okay, 2 years ago, they've had effectively the same season the last 2 years. Does it seem like that? I'm sure. If you're a Tigers fan, I've kind of almost would promise that you do not feel like that last two seasons were the same. But basically, you look at it and it's like, okay, the last 2 years, you know, you're talking about a team who, I mean, basically they kind of won about the same number of games. They've won the wild card series each of the last 2 years, and they haven't been able to get over that next step. The next step has to be, this is the logical season to be the next step. It is kind of crazy that we say like, okay, well, short series, and it has helped them in the wild card, but they haven't like been able to take advantage of, you don't want to face Tarik Skubal twice in a series. Now they've got, again, a little bit more depth to that. All these things. But I do think this is, yeah, I think that this is a team that is well positioned. As we said, like, the question will be like, okay, what are the trades that you're willing to make and what are the possibilities out there? Because you just said, like, if he's healthy, I don't know if you'd be willing to trade Bryce Rainer. Like, I do think that a Bryce Rainer, like everything that we just talked about as far as the questions about them kind of up the middle and defend in the infield defensively, a year from now or a year and a half from now could all be answered, right? You could be saying, well, McGonagall's your second baseman and Bryce Rainer is your shortstop. And that looks really good defensively and really good offensively. That could be kind of crucial to them long-term. But if Bryce Rainer, if you were willing to trade him in a deal, you could, that would be the headliner at the deal, at the deadline. Like you said, Briseño, if Briseño comes out, like Briseño was not as strong after he got up to double A, but if Briseño goes back to double A this year, shows improvement defensively. That's the one. Okay. Maybe I've stretched a bridge a little too far. you and I have both, like, I've tried to make a point of watching a lot of Jose Briseño defensively, and it's a, you are asking a lot if you expect him defensively to get to where he is a playable catcher.
I think the tough thing with Briseño too, because I have seen him, his first complex league in 23. So when he came over, right? I saw him in 24 spring training. I saw him in 25 spring training. I saw him during the season at multiple points during 25. He has improved from that first time I saw him in 2023, JJ. He has improved. Credit to him. He's a better defender than he was. But that said, there are high school guys. There are, I've seen Division III college guys that catch better than Briseño. Like,
it clinks. I mean, he misses balls that,
but his footwork, I mean, even his footwork in 2023, I came back and was like, this guy's like plodding. He can't really move. He's not twitchy. His footwork is a lot better. He's moving better. But that's with 3 years of concentrating on learning that position. And we know even guys that start from a very high floor, a guy like Shea Langeliers, still had to make adjustments and improve in certain areas as a blocker, as a receiver, as a framer, and as a professional. And he was a guy who, you know, won defensive awards in college and was, you know, well known for his glove. Mm-hmm. Walker Yannick, there were things that the Astros talked about having to improve with him. He was an outstanding defensive catcher in college. So it's the defensive demands of that position are as great as any in sports, at least for someone that contributes offensively. I don't care what position you're playing, what sport you're playing. There are very few positions where every single defensive play begins with you either making a good or a bad play. And when you make the good plays, nobody notices. You make the bad plays, everybody notices because they're so catastrophic.
The other thing with him is that stood out is, like, when it comes to blocking, if he's within his frame, he's fine. If it goes beyond his frame, he just doesn't move quickly enough to block it. And then again, like, I don't want to make this sound like, because I think that we both think Briseño is a top 100 prospect, but he has some limitations. As a catcher, has limitations. And offensively, I mean this in the best way. He is a really good, smart hitter with a long swing and not exception and average at best bat speed. So what I mean by that is that he gets to his power because he really knows what he's doing. He is someone, we've talked about it before. You can't pitch to Kevin McGonigal. There is no scouting report you can have where you say, if you just go do this three times against Kevin McGonigal, three plate appearances, you'll get him out. He'll sit down. No, Kevin McGonigal can cover the whole zone. He can hit velo. He can do a little bit of everything. Jose Briseño is a guy who I'd say, if you execute your plan, you can get him out. If you make a mistake, he will punish you, and he can really punish you. There's a lot of those guys who have useful, productive big league careers. It's just like, it's a different level of, if you said he's the headliner in a deal, you may be a little disappointed. If you're a Tigers fan, it's like, that's all you got. And it would be because someone's saying, okay, he's a DH who we hope can play first base. We're not taking him because we think he can catch. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing that, well, then that becomes a much harder sell as kind of the cornerstone of a deal. Like, again, Max Anderson had a great year. Max Anderson as a cornerstone of a deal is going to be like, the team taking him is going to, they're going to ask around the room. And it's like, can this guy play second base for us right now? It's like, I don't know about that. He's improved to where he's a below average for second baseman. And then if you said, well, where else is he going to play? That again gets tough, right? Like, there's this number of these guys, like, you can like how you lead. They got him in a trade from the Phillies a few years ago. That's where it's like, okay, you're going to have to find the right match potentially on this, or you're going to have one of these guys who's a little tools. You're kind of have that breakout first half. Like, And then you're like, oh, okay. Like, again, like, let's say a Jordan Yost, who was a first, you know, was a premium pick for them. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a guy who's a really athletic shortstop. If he has a great start to his first full pro season, I could see him being someone you're like, okay, we can make this kind of the start of the foundations of a big deal. Like, guys like that, where the guys who have solid bats, but defensive questions, you can trade those guys, but you often, I feel like, end up a little bit disappointed in what the return is, because the bar, when you don't have a clear defensive home, the bar for playing time becomes very difficult very quickly. And we've seen that just year in, year out, where you go, where you have guys where you're like, wait, what happened to, again, to take a couple examples from recent years, they all seem to end up as Marlins, but what happened to Davison De Los Santos? And I, you know, he had an incredible year 2 years ago in the minors, and, but he has defensive questions. He has strikeout concerns, and the power dissipated. A few years ago, it was, well, you know, well, is there going to be a room for Matt Mervis in the big leagues? And then he ends up, no, it's, the challenge is you have to, maybe Jonathan Long, who I, we both like, is another, you know, like, if you are a first base only and there's defensive questions about you, especially, that becomes a lot tougher to kind of cornerstone a deal. Probably overemphasize that, but that's my point.
Yeah. Well, it will be interesting to see where things go with this system in the coming months. I think it's a very exciting season if you're a Tigers fan. After a lot of really frustrating years, I think things have gotten better over the last couple. Could really crescendo in 2026. You know, I think we're talking about a legitimate contender with the ability to supplement their roster in a variety of ways, whether it's trades or, you know, internal upgrades that could be coming down the pike. So really exciting Tiger system. I'm excited I got an opportunity to talk about this with you, JJ. Any sort of closing thoughts before we wrap this up?
So I do think, again, I think that the Tigers are at a very interesting point. You know, the big picture is like, I do feel like we didn't even talk about the possibility. Like, there hasn't been a lot of talk of us, but like, okay. Or the other option, if you really didn't feel like that this was the year, you could also look at trading Tarek Skubal. And by the way, that would be I would say this, having kind of done a little bit of kind of the intellectual exercise, I could see where there's the possibility where there could be a logical reason to do so, not because of the money, but because of the, I mean, I want to write a piece about this at some point. I do think that the limited compensation you get when you have a player leave in free agency, I think that when you talk about the, you know, the non, you know, like maybe there's a provision where if you're above the luxury tax, you don't get compensation or something like that, you know, the thresholds or whatever. But I do think, I wish that there was a way, without punishing teams who sign free agents, that there was a way to give back more in compensation so that we weren't talking about why there might be a logical reason to trade one of the best pitcher in the American League like Tarek Skubal. But if the Tigers could get back a young premium starting pitcher, basically big league ready, cost controlled for years to come, maybe there would be a move that would make some sense. But I do think that this is a team, to wrap it up, that has a real chance to do damage in 26. And I would say the Valdez signing under a shorter term, higher AAV deal really kind of pushes towards that direction. But then I do think that this is a team that it's not about it's all 2026 or bust, because it's going to change a little bit. You're not going to have a Cy Young winner necessarily at the front of your rotation, but you will have potentially, when you look at a team that could have a batting champ down the road in Kevin McGonigal, who could have, again, a guy like O'Reilly Green, who's a very productive slugger, you know, in the middle of your lineup, who could add in, again, a Max Clark, a Bryce Rainer. Kerry Carpenter is a very good hitter. Like, he does what he does very well. Got one of the better catching combos in the American League, and Dylan Dingler should be there for years to come. Like, there's a lot of things here that aren't just good for this year. They're good for the long term. And by the way, Jackson Jobe, who will still be quite young when he returns, but a fully healthy Jackson Jobe at 27, if you said, who is your pointing to who could be the long-term replacement for Skubal? Well, that's your guy. That's a guy who has a chance to be a front of the rotation starter to go with a Valdez. And by the way, because you've signed Valdez, you're not asking him in 2027 to be the ace at the start of the season, but you are hoping that by the end of 27, even if Skubal's gone, that you then have still a two-headed monster to basically roll into the playoffs around other pitchers and all that. It's, again, it's a good system. It's a good situation. And if you're a Tigers fan, it's kind of the best situation you've had, I feel like, for quite a while.
Yeah, it's since Miguel Cabrera, Max Scherzer, you know, Porcello, David Price, like all those guys were on the team. That was the last time this team looked this dangerous. That said, JJ, thank you for joining me today. All of those that have tuned in, thank you for tuning in to the video show and then the podcast, if you stuck around on that. We have the 31 to 40s up on the site. We didn't think 900 prospects were enough, so we decided to give you guys another 300. Go and check those out, as well as the top 30s, updated draft rankings, updated fantasy top 500 prospect list, et cetera, et cetera. There is a wealth of content that you get with your Baseball America subscription. For all subscribers listening, I want to thank you for subscribing and supporting us. It's why we get to do what we do and provide this great content to you. Have a great week.